This is Nick from Shock Withdrawal, and you're listening to the Brutally Delicious Podcast.
Nick,
what up? How's it going?
Where do I know you from?
Where are you from?
I'm in Richmond. Did you used to work at a bar in Brooklyn?
Absolutely. Several, yeah.
I think you did a Rocktail thing for me. A Michelada or something.
I did. That was when I was in White Widow's Pack.
Yeah, that's it.
That's right. No shit. That's funny. Oh, now it comes together.
The name rings a bell, and then I saw your face. I'm like, shit, I know you for sure.
Wow.
Good. Nice damn. To see you, man. That was a me while too. Ago.
Yeah, that was at like 7 or 8 years ago, probably.
Wow.
Had to
interesting.
Cool. Well,
cool. Thank you guys for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You guys are out in what, California now?
We're all split up. So I'm in LA. Nick and Jono are in Texas, but they spend time on the East Coast as well. You know, we like to make things logistically difficult for ourselves, but still doing it.
That's it. And multitasking, as Mitchell was saying. So let's jump in right away. Shock Withdrawal. For those not familiar, let's start with, can you give us the 2-sentence elevator pitch?
Mitch, you want to do that?
Oh man, 2-sentence elevator pitch. Let's see. Definitely the band. It's a grindcore band with a lot of death metal influence, and it's just genuine music. And we're just a bunch of nerds playing shit we love. That's it. I don't know.
Fair enough. And so you mentioned that you guys are geographically separated. How do you guys go about your writing process then? Are you just emailing stuff back and forth, or do you ever get together and create?
It's both. We started out the very beginning of the band just during COVID stuff, sending riffs to, back and forth, me and Jono. We've been trying to get we wanted to do a band like this since we were way young, like a million years ago. We've been through so many bands. It was our original idea to have a band like this, and then we just kind of did other things. But anyway, I was pestering him during COVID. I was like, here's riffs. I was just writing like, all right, here's a 1-minute song. Here's another 1-minute song, whatever, whatever. And then we kind of started putting it together, got Mitch involved. You know, it was really quick, not really together. Me and John put the songs together and Mitch sang over them. This one, we had parts we all listened to. We all put together. Mitch has flown down a couple times. And when me and John are in town, because I also have a band in LA, so I'll be in LA for a couple weeks or I'm there, and you know, our paths cross, so we have to time it. So if he's here, we'll get in there together, we'll hash it out, we'll send stuff to Mitch, and then just like go from there. Now we've got a little more fine tuned. We got a good recording situation in our drummer's little studio. Because yeah, for a while it was a little more difficult, I guess.
Right. But technology makes it pretty easy as well, right?
Absolutely.
Makes it possible. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about lyrically. From reading the research I've done, pretty heavy emotional topics on this record, which I don't think is necessarily common for grindcore. But can you elaborate on your lyrical content?
Man, honestly, I was just... I was having a really hard time writing lyrics in the beginning because, you know, in past bands of mine, I'd always talk about, you know, socially relevant topics and, you know, not necessarily political, but like leaning towards that and just like my view on the world. And I feel like now writing about that would be just so on the nose because it's just in our face all the time. It's there on our phones and it's just overwhelming. And I was just like, having a hard time, and I decided, fuck it, why don't I just write about my personal experiences and how I'm feeling at the moment and the shit I'm going through. And you know, I don't really discuss it with that many people. I just really fucking put it out there, and this is my way of like turning something negative into something positive, you know, because I love this music and it just good to put it out there, and maybe someone else is going through similar things and they could listen to it and maybe relate if they read the lyrics, that is. Yeah, I just felt that the best approach is just being raw and genuine, and it was so, it was kind of scary at first to do it, but yeah, here we are.
I love that you did that, because I 100% agree the world is too political and it's too in your face, and sometimes you need an escape, which I think this is perfect for. But I also want to know, was it difficult being vulnerable and putting yourself out there? Like, oh shit, this is me. This is the stuff that everyone else doesn't see, but now you do.
I feel like I'm the type of human who's an open book overall. So all of my friends know that I am just super candid at all times. In a way, yes and no. I don't know. I'm always real. I don't know how to not be real. So, you know, I'm a little like, some of it was hard. I'm like, oh God, I hope people don't get the wrong impression with some of this shit I'm putting out there. But again, it's just what I was feeling, and emotions come and go. And, you know, yeah, there's low points and high points. And I'll turn this low point into playing it live and it being a high point sometimes. So, hey, yeah.
I think this kind of music, or especially the heavy, more extreme stuff, is very cathartic as well. So I think it's great that, you know, you can funnel your emotional shit into it and let it out. And as far as even, you know, as a listener, I'm not a musician, but listening to heavier music does that for me. So I imagine it's kind of just like a weight off your shoulders.
Yeah, man. Better in therapy, for sure. I tried that.
Cheaper.
a lot cheaper. Right. Well, I don't know, man. Recording a record ain't too cheap, but it's more fulfilling than therapy.
Right. Fair enough. So putting yourself out there and doing that kind of stuff, is there a message or a takeaway that you want your fans to have after they listen to it?
Just know that there's other people out there going through the same things you're experiencing, that you're never alone. You know, you can be nihilistic, but optimistic, find joy in the small things, you know, not everything has to have a grand meaning, just enjoy it for what it is.
Okay, fair enough. Nick, you have anything?
No, I mean, I agree. And to deliver that in a pretty aggressive vessel, I guess, that comes across and really doesn't give you a whole lot of time to process, kind of makes the person have to look in to find these things, which is cool. Because if they want to slow down and rewind and read between the lines, that's what it takes. You know, you have to do that. So I think in any sort of art or anything, that's a good thing. It's like, it's not buried, but you have to look for it.
How does it make you feel when the emotions and the, all of your stuff you put into the songs comes alive in front of an audience, or even connects with somebody and you get an email or an after the show thing saying, hey, you know, that got me through this. That's got to be the ultimate payoff, right?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the ultimate payoff is just making music for like-minded weirdos, you know, people who are into this type of niche version of grind to death metal, you know, if they so happen to read into it, that's awesome, but I don't expect that, you know?
Okay. Are you guys writing these songs for how they're going to come across on stage? Like, hey, this is a good point for a breakdown or a jump, or are you writing songs for the song's sake and then acclimating it to the stage?
That's a good question. Honestly, with this, we're just kind of going, at least I can speak from the first start of the process. It's just something we can get excited about. Me and Jono, all of us, everybody, you, I'm sure include everybody. If you're an extreme music fan, you listen to such a wide space and everything somewhere. So all these influencers are just flooding in, and it's like not a lot of thought sometimes. It's just like come out with something that feels right, and then you start thinking like, oh, this would go good there. We're just influenced by so many different bands. I think the most thought is probably put in with our drummer, who is like, all right, I'm going to blast this song and then I need to move on. And then that sends me off into another path too. Or I write a riff and he's like, oh, this will go good this way. It might be different. You know, I don't really know. We just want to write stuff that we like. And playing live obviously is completely different and nerve wracking on its own. If you put too much shit in there and it's dark and you're just like, oh, you know, right. But, so I don't know. I think the next one we'll have a better idea of maybe that influences some of it, but not yet.
Okay. The crowd. You mentioned the influences, and I think everyone, or I think most metalheads and most people in the extreme metal world, they have like a gateway record or gateway band that got them into the whole scene. You know, for me, it was like Diary of a Madman. I remember picking it up, seeing it in the store and going, holy shit, I don't know anything about Ozzy, but the record cover looks cool. And then, you know, the first three notes of Over the Mountain and I'm sucked in for life. What was it for you guys?
Mitch?
Ooh, for me, I think I have two records. I'm a bit younger, not that young, but I mean, not really metal, but I remember having a tape copy of Nirvana's In Utero, and the song Tourette's towards the end was like way heavier and more aggressive. I'm like, holy shit, this is cool. And then I remember I had a friend who played the Cowboys from Hell Pantera for me, and I thought it was great. But then I went to the store and I bought the new Pantera album at the time, and it was Far Beyond Driven. And the moment I pressed play and I heard Strength Beyond Strength, my life absolutely fucking changed. I was like, this, I need more of this. This is fucking incredible. And the rest is history. That was definitely that was one.
What about you, Nick?
So a friend of mine, I was always into music when I was a kid, you know, and in the 80s and stuff, I'd sit and watch from the TV, watch the fucking videos and all that shit. And I was always absorbing it. My parents had tons of records, all sorts. I mean, you go from Frank Zappa 10 years after to like soul music to like, I mean, blues, everything down that length, country, all sorts. So I was always like a big Michael Jackson fan for a long time. Sure. All through my childhood, and I remember liking rock music always, but one thing that really just took it all, and rap. I was a huge rap fan in late 80s, early 80s. That was like,
I'm going to interrupt you. I think Demartini is so underrated, man. Even to this day, he's so underrated.
Oh, no, I said rap, but I love Demartini also.
Oh, I thought you said rat. I was like, whoa, I think I agree with you. I love those records.
Oh, no, rap like hip-hop. That was a big deal. But I love Rat, and Warren D. Martin is one of my favorite of that era. That's a whole nother him. And
yeah, sorry. I misheard.
Yeah, we could talk about White Lion. We go way down there. Also big influences. But we fast forward to when I was – this is like 91, I guess. And I had a friend whose older brother lived down the street. And we used to go – there's an empty lot where they hadn't built houses yet. We go hit the ball. He'd bring his boombox. He was like – hey, yeah, I got some tapes from him and this Metallica band. And I had seen the Metallica logo. I didn't have any connection to it. I mean, I'd seen it. I might have heard it. It didn't click. But he brought over whatever the first thing, I think it was Inner Sandman, cassette single. And he has his brother bought all the stuff that just came out. He put it in, and I was just like, what the hell? That guitar sound just like... just smoked me. I was like, and it sounded really good in the boom box with the bass and all that. I was just like, this is incredible. This, I love Guns N' Roses, also, but this is something else. And that was immediately like, boom, I'm obsessed with this. And that led into Pantera. And then growing up with Texas, that's unavoidable. And then Pantera and just having magazines where you're looking at rockabilly and seeing the t-shirts and like, who's Morbid Angel? Who's that? And then eventually live, I got to see Pantera and I Hate God open in that and White Zombie. And that just like to see that stuff live, that was permanent, down as dirty as it goes, you know, all the way to the bottom, all the way back up. So, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys planning on taking this on the road?
Yeah.
The
idea is to get some shows together. I mean, it's been more difficult. Everybody's touring and playing right now. And our schedules are making it really hard. So it's just figuring this out. We'll get it together. So if anyone out there wants us to come to your town, hit us up, drop us a line.
Yeah, it's been a little challenging, you know, the new project. My our old bands used to tour a lot, but like getting something going again, now that we're in our 40s, we're eager to hit the road, but it has to be, you know, it has to be the right moves.
It's got to make sense, you know, right?
It has to make sense. I played in dive bars to 20 people more times than I can remember. I loved it. It was a blast. But ideally, this should be a little more strategic. And, you know, we don't have a booking agent yet. And I haven't booked a DIY tour in maybe a decade. So, yeah, we're working on it, though. We're eager to get out there and jam with some homies and revisit old friends and, you know, just have a good time. That's the only reason we do it.
So you mentioned, you know, playing to 20 people. What's it like, or how do you prepare, and what is the energy like when you're playing to 20 people as opposed to, I don't know, 10,000 if you've ever played to that many people?
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Is a show, or is it different?
Oh, I always give it 100% no matter what, because out of those 20 people there, there's maybe 10 that really came to see you, and it doesn't matter. And also, you know, it's just, it feels great to be playing this music with your friends in a room. You know, it doesn't matter where we're at. Time is limited. You know,
right.
You only, who knows how many times you're going to be able to get to do this in your life. So might as well enjoy it and do it 100%. And, you know, if I'm not completely exhausted by the time the set's done, then I didn't play hard enough and I don't care in front of who. That's just my MO.
That's beautiful. Because at the end of the day, I guess, you know, whoever, even the 10 people paid their money to get there, and it's not their fault that it didn't fill. So.
Yeah. And who knows, maybe someone stumbled in and they see something they've never heard of and they're like, holy shit, these guys are going hard, and it's a bunch of blast beats and cacophonous noise. What the fuck is going on?
You can be the bridge band for somebody, you know, if you're one of those bands like the ones we mentioned. To me, that's the coolest thing. If someone's, any of my projects are like, yeah, I didn't really like that, I didn't really know about it, and then I listened to it and I was like, I'm hooked. Like, that's more important to me in the big picture. I mean, not like we all need to recruit more people to listen to this heavier music, but it's nice. It's nice to be a part of that. But I agree with him. It's like, play well, number one. Don't take for granted. Play the shit right. Don't go up there hammered and just slop it up just because. Definitely, we've all been there. Everybody has. Mm-hmm. I think different crowds. I mean, if you want to get detailed, I think you could perform different and make things. Obviously, if you're playing a bigger stage, you got to alter some things. But give it all, man, because it's, you don't know who's watching. You know, out of fucking 20, could be the one person, or it could be all of them, or out of 1,000, it could be one person you could change their life, or 1,000, or none. Or you're just up there giving it your all, and that's what life's about. So, yeah.
And I 100% agree with you, because I remember seeing the Cancer Bats here in Richmond on like a Tuesday night a couple of years ago in, and it was January, fucking cold Tuesday night. It was me, the bartender, and like one other guy. And it was one of the best shows I've ever seen. They went hard.
Wow. Yeah, they're a good band. We, White Widows, played with them, and their singers sang on one of our records too back in the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
they were great. I mean, it was unbelievable, but it was really like me, the bartender, and then some guy who probably stumbled off the street, but unbelievable show. They did not, you know, they left everything on the stage, just like I imagine they would do in a, you know, an arena or whatever.
That's cool. I like that. Yeah.
So what's next for you guys then? Are you going to be releasing singles, like the new business model, or what do you have planned out?
Well, actually, Mitch might be able to explain it better, but we're about to do a live stream where people can come in and, I guess, chat and listen to the record. It'd be a short hang, to be honest, because, I mean, it's not super long. But we're doing a full length. So we're just spacing these out to kind of get a little promo up to the bigger release. And
which comes out Friday. And but once this is out, we're just going to keep writing new stuff and figure out where we're at by the end of the year and either do another EP or a full length or something. I mean, we can get away with a 20-minute full length as a grindcore band. Yeah. Not saying that there's not a lot in those songs, you know?
No, I get it.
Yeah, but there's so much crammed into a track sometimes that, like, I feel like more than 25 minutes would absolutely exhaust the listener. You know, since it's us being courteous.
Yeah, definitely beat them upside the head.
Yeah, can't punish them into oblivion, just to the edge. Yeah, exactly.
So one more for you. When you're going to do like that live stream or whatever, how much thought do you put into the, or how much effort and brain cells do you put into the people who are negative, right? Because there can be a lot of keyboard warriors in your chat group on top of your regular fans. Do you give them any credit at all, or do you just kind of move on?
I think just joking. Mitch gives everyone shit 24/7. So it's like, we probably deserve some of it. But if they do come in, it's like, it's more like just laugh with them, because it's the energy is whatever energy you want to take and give is what you got. So don't get mad about it. And that's okay if they don't like something. I don't care if they don't like the way we sound or look or what. That's fine. That's freedom. Feel that way. But if you want to be mean about it, then I'm just going to, like, I'm not going to take you seriously as a person, but we can joke around about it. I don't care. My feelings are.
We live in this weird society now where everybody has to comment, even if they know nothing about it. And most of the people like to negatively comment, right?
Yeah. This is true. But, I have this strange outlook, which is I'd rather you listen to it and think it sucks than not listen to it at all. So feel free, have a listen. Tell me how much you hate it. I'm genuinely curious about what you don't like about it sometimes. Right. So whatever, I don't care. It's fine.
For better, go tell everyone. I would be like, listen, this sucked that bad. Please go tell everybody you know how bad this sucks. Go ahead.
Right, so they come listen too, right?
Tell us. Tell everyone. Yeah.
Nice. That's great. if fans want to find you guys, can you give us your socials?
It's Shock Withdrawal on just about everything on Instagram. I think Instagram's what we post on the most. There's a Facebook, usually Bandcamp. If you go on Bandcamp and if you click follow, it puts you on a mailing list where on occasion I'll send out a mass email with, news and updates on stuff. But that's pretty much it.
If you want to find Mitch, go to Highland Village.
Highland Park.
Sir. Highland Park. Highland in Dallas. Go to any bar. You'll find him eventually.
Yes. Working.
So that's going to bring me to the end of this. And did I miss anything you want to cover?
No, I'd say that's pretty spot on, man. Thanks. That's cool questions. Good hangs.
Good. So before we go then, I'm not letting you go yet. I've got a couple off the wall, ridiculous questions that I usually mix up and ask. They end up being really good shorts for my social media people.
Right.
Nothing to do with Shock Withdrawal, pretty much nothing to do with anything we're talking about, just fucked up questions. You game?
Yep.
Yeah, let's do it. I love fucked up questions.
I'll just hit you with three. If you don't like it, we can just move on. But is a hot dog a sandwich?
It could be anything you want it to be. It's a multi-purpose tool. Just get creative.
I say yes, but it just brings the question, is anything with the bread that's cut this half on the other end of the spectrum too, depending on the meat? So, sure. Yeah, it could be a sandwich. Why not?
I would say so. I mean, because if you cut that little whatever, somebody once on the show called it a hot dog hymen or a bun. Whatever, you cut that stupid thing up, then it's a sandwich, right? Because the definition.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm with you. So same line.
If hot dogs were sentient, do you think they'd question their existence if they're a sandwich or not? Would they?
If you were a hot dog, would you eat yourself? Wasn't that the question?
Yes, absolutely.
How are we getting deep? Hey, is cereal a soup?
Ooh. No.
Why?
Because soup is made in water, and that's what creates it. Unless the cereal was made within the milk, because it's essentially just too much dressing in a giant salad of whole grains and minerals. Possibly.
I have asked that question so many times, and that's the best answer I've gotten. Everybody always says no, but then because it's cold, and then you can't really use that argument because you got like Russian borscht and all these other cold soups. So that doesn't work. That was the right, best answer.
Gazpacho.
Yeah, right. So there's other things.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So what mythical creature would improve the world the most if it existed?
Cthulhu. To wipe us all out.
Hold on, let me hold back on while I don't want to lose any fans here.
We can take the fifth if you want.
No, I got hold on. Mythical creature that
I mean, you're not going to offend anybody here. We've had people say,
yeah. This,
you're like a fan of it.
It was going to turn a little more serious. Something like that. We need a Godzilla or something, kind of tidy up.
You're a fan of like centaurs, right? Like if you had like a cool centaur to ride, take you around.
Cool. So the last one, what three things could you purchase at the grocery store that would make the cashier the most uncomfortable?
Depends on location in the country, I would imagine.
This is all true. Right,
so Texas. You're in Texas. Let's use Texas.
Mm-hmm. In Texas, maybe all the ingredients for chili and a whole bunch of beans with that might piss some people off because they don't like beans in their chili.
I also like that you didn't go for like the obvious shock value that everyone goes for. That was beautiful.
Yeah, I was about to say like a PVC pipe, some gloves, and Crisco. You know?
Yeah, we get a lot of that. You know, some enemas and whatever. That was actually pretty good.
That's just Mitch's daily list. You go on his fridge. That's all it's on there.
Always bikinis and Crisco. Yeah. That is all I've got. I hope that wasn't too bad.
A rat trap in there too. You got to get a rat trap. You know, nice. A little creative.
Thank you, my friend. It's good seeing you.
You too.
Be well. Man. You're in Richmond, you said?
Yes.
Oh, right on. Cool, man. I fucking love Richmond. Maybe we'll be there sometime soon. It'll roll.
Great. Yeah, I love it here, too. It's really nice. Great metal scene. Great history. Yeah, great everything. Yeah.
Fuck, what was the bar with the arcade? It closed down.
Barcade?
No, there was a bar with like a little arcade and a restaurant. This dude, Mark, used to run the booking there.
Jesus Christ. Oh, is it Strange Matter?
Yes, man. That venue fucking ruled so much.
Yeah, that's the venue I was telling you about with Cancer Bats. That's where I saw them.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that place absolutely. Is awesome. Yeah.
I liked it a lot. But you're right. It's gone and it's sitting vacant.
Oh, that's such a bummer.
Yeah.
Like Richmond in general, I always loved it. And I remember years ago, my old band played a sushi restaurant, Nara Sushi. And that was fucking incredible. Yeah. Anyhow.
Cool.
Anyway, man.
Be well, my friends. Take care. Nick, good seeing you again. Cheers.
You too. Later. Bye.
Well, hey, friends. My name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like the Lumineers, Ani DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask? Good
morning. I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon. Again.